Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
On today's Starting Nine, Snake and Carl sit down with King of JUCO, Eric Sim, to talk about his life in baseball and preposterous growth as an online content creator around the game. Before and after that, we get into some playoff series clinches, we get into a new playoff format, some corrections, mistakes, and a whole bunch of news around the league. Let's get into it. Let's have a great Starting Nine. Action! Welcome back to Starting Nine. Carl here in Chicago, Snake in Austin. Special time of year, buddy. It is. Late September. That's why we grind. That's why we grind all 162.
You know, if you're a casual fan, this is your favorite time of the year, no doubt about it. But if you're, you know, if you grind like we do and you just love baseball, every game of the season matters. And you understand that as soon as you get a taste of the postseason, you realize like April is just as important as September to get into October. Some of the teams that don't necessarily have that seasoned clubhouse, certain things are different in April, but you get a little taste, you get a little taste of the glory, to quote Nacho Libre, you understand it. So we talked just about quote, the Yankees a couple
Nacho
weeks ago.
Libre, real quick, yeah, just Nacho yeah. Libre.
He wants a little taste of the glory, see what it tastes like. It's I don't know if it's underrated or if it's properly rated, but I think it's a good movie. Two, 3 weeks ago, Yankees were sliding a little bit. Now they're 8-2 in their last 10. Seems like they're getting back to where they were, even though Judge is homerless in his last 7. He had 4 walks last night, I believe. Still taking his walks. Come on, guys, we got to pitch to him. Don't be scared. Pitch to the guy, make quality pitches, but he needs to get to 65 homers. He's got a few games left. So,
well, you're just saying that because you're sitting on an Aaron Judge card.
No, I mean, I really don't care about the value. I'll be honest. Like, my baseball stuff that I have, I'm not worried about the value. That's more like personal collection. The football and basketball, those are the things that I'm going to, that I buy, sell, trade. But let's face it, we're collecting baseball stuff. Judge was nice enough to sign a couple cards for us. And I don't care what anybody offers me for those. Those are staying in the collection.
Yeah. Well, and maybe he will hit those 65 home runs, regardless of the value for the personal collection. It is important to point out we've been on the Aaron Judge might not get to 62 thing for a while here, 7 homerless games in a row. It is funny that with Albert Pujols and hitting 700, I think everybody in baseball is like, yeah, feed him the heater, go right at him, give him a shot. There's something about Judge, though, where a lot of people are like, yeah, whatever, pitcher on him. Like, there's more people that would enjoy him not getting to 60 than Pujols not getting to 70.
No doubt, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, for every person that wants to see him get to 62 or, past 61, there's equal parts or more they probably don't want to see him get there for whatever reason, Boston fans or just opposing teams in the East or whoever, just guys that like to hate on, the best of the best. But if you like baseball, obviously my team is and will always be the Cubs, but I respect every player that has a major league uniform and I want to see the best players succeed at the highest level. And I think most people, even if you're, a fan of another team in the AL East, you gotta respect it, and you have to just enjoy it. Enjoy the greatness that is unfolding. And we mentioned it a week ago or a couple shows back that it surprises me that nobody in the American League has passed 61 with all of the prolific, home run hitters that we've had over the years. It's crazy, but it just shows you how difficult it is in the increase in stuff and effectiveness of these arms in the big leagues today. I mean, juice balls or not, hitting's extremely hard.
We're going to talk at the end of today's show. We have the King of JUCO, wildly popular YouTube sensation, Eric Sim, who's like a velocity guru. I shouldn't say guru. He's just like a junkie. How about that? Just lives for velo. It's a cool conversation at the end of the show. Profane, profoundly profane. We'll talk about that later, but an interesting conversation about velocity, because you're right. I mean, the way these guys are all training today, it could trend back. There's a guy in the Braves, he's on the list. We might as well just talk about him now. Is it Bruce Elder, the rookie? He was out last night. If you haven't had a chance, go check out this guy's clips. 90-91, heavy sink. I don't want to get too deep on this because this is just like a footnote, but I sent you the video because I was like, I can't.
No, we should talk about it. We should talk about it. And it's important for – with all of the all the high praise around velocity and stuff and spin rate, and all that stuff is important. But, you know, there are guys out there – Kyle Hendricks, you know, Zach Davies is still doing it. There are guys that have upper 80s, low 90s with some good action. And it's a good lesson for kids to learn that, you know, and don't, you know, don't get upset if you don't have the mid 90s, upper 90s. And we talked to Eric Sim about this. Not everybody, in a day and age where it seems like everybody has that sort of velocity and that sort of, you know, miles per hour on the mound or exit velocity as a hitter, that's just not the case. And some of those guys might go overlooked, but if you're a young player, say you might be undersized and you're trying to maximize your ability and your physicality, and if you get to your ceiling and your ceiling is 91, 92 miles an hour, you can still pitch in the big leagues. You can still be successful. You can get big league hitters out on a consistent basis. It's just there's other things you have to do well. I mean, there's a few things that are important as a pitcher, kind of getting sidetracked, but it's velocity, command, and movement. If you have all three, I mean, you're going to be a Cy Young. If you have two, you'll still be good. If you have one, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. But the most important thing, the two most important are command and movement. Command and movement. And if you can do that, you can pitch it. You can pitch at 85. If you can get the ball to move right to left, left to right, move the ball up and down, and if you have good movement, you know, just like Elder does. I mean, that's fun to watch. I mean, he's throwing 80, 89, 90 miles an hour. He's got, you know, 16 inches of you know, horizontal and vertical break on his sinker. And he's gonna, you know, he's getting the job done. So do not fret if you're a youngster with below 95. It's possible.
It is possible. I should also correct, it's Bruce. He should go by Bruce. His name's Bryce. He's a rookie. I don't care. If I get a rookie's first name wrong after a big start, I apologize. But Texas boy, and the Texas program, University of Texas, breeds fellas like this. A couple big takeaways for me. You know, Spencer Strider goes down with the oblique, and it's just funny that another Braves rookie comes out, complete game shutout, and they're neck and neck. I mean, it's tied 97 games apiece between them and the Mets. Everything is must-win for the Braves from here until the end of the season, and it's just laughable that here comes another guy. But, no, it's not a velocity-heavy, nasty stuff. I mean, it is nasty, the 90-91, but the clip I sent to you, and we'll post this through the Starting Nine social media, go check that out, because it is fascinating the way he's dotting up, running the two seam back to the outside corner against righties. That's a dangerous pitch to throw, because if you start a back door sinker, two seamer, whatever Bryce wants to call it, and you start that to a right-handed hitter, and you're saying, "Hey, I'm going to throw this on the outside, and it's going to hit the outside corner and freeze him." You miss that where you fucking throw it on the outer half and that thing runs over to the middle of the plate. That thing is getting absolutely nuked.
Like, yeah, no different.
Huge miss. It's a big miss area.
So high risk, high reward. And that, yep. A big part of that is understanding through repetition and through flat grounds and bullpens and just years and years of kind of perfecting, you know, your delivery. You know, if your delivery is rock solid, your arm slot's in the same spot 99% of the time. Your release point is very consistent. You're going to know your starting points. You know, I would typically start, and you know, it's called a hip shot for a reason. You know, I'd start that. I'd basically try and drive it right through a left-handed hitter's right hip, and trust the arm speed, the action on the, you know, on the sinker, you know, two seam, whatever. Is going to come back to that corner. And if I miss, I just wanted to miss slightly off. And, you know, until guys develop that feel, you'll see those hip shots come back to the middle of the plate on a left-hand hitter or to a right-hand hitter. So equally dangerous if you miss your spot, and especially if you're trying to go, I think there's a little bit more leeway to a righty. But if that ball leaks back kind of middle in down to a lefty, I mean, we all know that that's the nitro zone for most left-handed hitters. So,
and what's with that with lefties where it's just like they just drop the barrel? And they don't say this. Pitching coaches will never – you'll never hear them be like, oh, the righties dropped the barrel. There's just something lefties, big, chunky lefties can just drop a barrel. The worst pitch to throw in baseball is like down and into a left-handed hitter. I don't understand it. The physics.
I don't completely understand it either. I'm sure that there's somebody out there that could try and act like they understand it. You don't see that. You definitely don't see it as much from the right side for whatever reason. There are guys that can kind of, there are righties that can scoop that, you know, like Trout, JD Martinez is one. Chris Bryant is another one. I would say Paul Goldschmidt is probably in that category, and there, you know, Arenado, maybe, Trevor Story, potentially. There's not a lot of them. I mean, it's pretty rare. I don't know. I don't know why that is. They just they have that swing path more consistently than right-handed hitters do. Corey Seager has a flat, more of a flat swing from a lefty. He's a good high ball hitter. So like when I would go into lefties with the hip shot, I would typically try and keep it more at the hands, and you kind of get that, you know, where they kind of stick their bat out and they kind of jump out of the way. Much harder to hit, much harder to stay on top of than that one that's down and in. And there, it's very interesting. I don't know if you've seen this guy floating around on Instagram or social media at all, but he is he's a hitting coach. I don't know if Judge uses him, but this guy talks about Aaron Judge a lot and his hitting technique. And his name, I'm going to pull him up real quick. His name is, so I think his channel is Teacherman
Gary.
Hitting.
Teacherman.
Okay. And this is it's very unique, but I love what he's talking about. You know, you always hear stay on plane, like swing level. And if you watch, you know, the way Judge swings, I mean, that barrel, like the barrel drops and it's kind of counter. It goes against what, you know, guys have talked about for years. But when you listen to him talk, I mean, it makes a ton of sense. So the only thing that changes is basically like your shoulder, the angle of your shoulders, and then the path of the swing stays the same. If the ball's up, the shoulders stay more level. If the ball's down, that right shoulder, if you're a right-handed hitter, or left shoulder, if you're a left-handed hitter, drops, and that bat path remains the same. So I'm going to look more into it. I think there's a lot to it. And obviously it works for Judge. It works for a lot of guys. And I think that it actually helps you. I bet Justin Turner.
That's what I'm thinking about.
He works on that because he gets the inside. He gets the inside pitch so well. So it's something to look into if you're a young hitter and you're always told to stay on top of the ball. And Josh Donaldson, he did a clip with MLB Network several years ago. He said, you know, if your coach tells you to get on top of the ball, like tell him he doesn't know what he's talking about. So I would listen to these big league hitters. And if any kids or parents are listening to this, take a look at Teacherman Hitting and see what you think. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, big concept I've always just, like, latched my brain onto is just the duration of the barrel traveling through the zone. So flat bats, when you say flat swings, that's a good thing because that means that the bat path is through the zone and on a plane where it can make contact, like it has the greatest chance of making contact. A great example would be Tony Gwynn, obviously just flat swing as hell. But the power surge is certainly interesting, and we'll see if there's going to be the power surge this playoffs.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat, and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
Maybe a dangerous idea to just go stay with some strangers, but I have faith. I do have faith. Send me an email, Carl at Barstool Sports. Tell me, listen, to starting nine, you're going to be going to the playoff games. I don't even give a shit where what playoff games. Seattle might be tough to get to, but I'll figure
out. A playoff game's a playoff game.
Period.
Yeah, being in attendance at a playoff game, being around the atmosphere, the crowds, especially, you know, a team like Seattle, who hadn't been there for, feels like forever.
Well, they're sliding now, and I went on a Mariners podcast on Monday, and I feel like these guys are ready to just jump off a cliff because they're like they're Mariners fans right now are so torn because they are going back to the playoffs, but they're like we don't even know we can't hit a lick. They don't think they can hit at all. They're in trouble. The fan base is very sensitive right now. Blew a 9-run lead on Sunday too.
That's rough. I mean, you know, they got the playing the Rangers now. Should be able to take care of business there. But to be this close and then to potentially not get in, that's tough for a fan base when they've had such a long dry spell. So you can feel their frustration. But they are where are they at? Let's see.
I think they should be. They haven't clinched, but they should be. I mean, it should be nearly impossible for them to blow it.
Yes.
It should be. They would have to lose.
Basically lose
six out. 6-7, and the Orioles would have to win 6-7.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, no need to panic. I mean, crazier things have happened, but they should be okay. Not that their fan base is going to listen to us.
And I bombed last episode. I owe apologies to this audience.
It's okay to bomb.
Hey, let me know.
What'd you bomb on?
I bombed bad. I fucked up our playoff seating so bad. I had to text Colin right after the show. I was like, hey, man, that's embarrassing. One play is 4 or 5.
Yeah, that's all right, man. It's a new format. We're getting used to it. We make mistakes.
You know, and I actually is surprised. I don't want to. You're an easy guy to make mistakes. You're a forgiving man. I appreciate that.
Well, shit, I make mistakes every day.
I'm fucking sorry. I owe you an apology because this is such
Why?
Big news.
No, it's great. It's great. You know, they were waiting for me to retire, so it finally happened, and I'm a part of the ceremony this year. Brian Holiday is an inductee as well. He was part of the first class that took the Horned Frogs to the College World Series, so very, very exciting. He had an amazing career. You know, I had two really nice years. At TCU, and I think it's a total of 7 or 8 people being inducted, 2 baseball guys, and I think there's a couple swimmers, track and field, I believe is in there, maybe a football player. So it's going to be exciting. So the ceremony's tomorrow or Thursday night. I'm going to go speak to the baseball team that early that afternoon, you know, kind of hang with them for a little bit. Friday, we got a golf outing, and then Saturday, we'll be on the field for the football game against OU. So it's going to be
So they'll bring you out at weekend. What, like halftime or something?
I think they're going to do something at halftime. I plan to run out on the field with the football team pregame, you know, as they're running out of the tunnel, get the hammies limber, you know, get the heart rate going, tip my cap. I mean, I don't even know if anybody knows who I am there. Right, like it's a bunch of.
Pretty sure TCU is gonna know who you are.
Well, I mean, I'm saying that the student body, I'm sure some do, but I'm sure you know a lot will be like, who's this guy? Okay, but it's gonna be a nice weekend.
If you're a senior at TCU, you're like 21, so you were a teenager. You were like, you know, 14, 15 years old when the Cubs won the World Series,
mm-hmm.
And then they know you. You're relevant.
That was,
they care.
15, 16 years ago.
Some of those guys are going to go, hey, you work for – what's Dave Portnoy like? How much does Big Cat make?
Sure. A lot. The answer is a lot.
You can't say that.
What am I supposed to say? None? Not much?
No. You can say, hey, man, a lot. You can say a lot.
Well, I don't even know what it is. I'm just assuming. He's good at what he does.
Yeah, and you know what? That's well said. Anybody who's good at what they do. I got good advice when I was a young man from a law school professor who was like, if you want to be in law school, be in law school. But if you want to be successful, do what you want to do, because that's when you're just going to beat up on everybody else. He's like, I'm actually passionate about the work that I do, so I'm able to just destroy my competition. But he's like, if you're not doing what you want to do, it's very, very hard to be better than the next guy. And if you're not better than the next guy, it's hard to get paid.
If you don't enjoy what you're doing, it's hard to have the desire to to go beyond, above and beyond what's expected of you. And if you enjoy what you do for a living, then that extra effort, working overtime, it's easier to do that. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't do what they love. Some people are kind of forced into occupations that provide for them and their families, But yeah, if you're fortunate enough to do what you love for a living, then it doesn't seem so much like work.
Yeah. Well, I'll point out there is someone on the radar today, on the agenda, who's very passionate about their job. Did you see the umpire last night call 3 straight balks?
I'm watching it right now.
What the?
Blyer, yeah. Left-handed reliever came in for the Marlins, and it was a 6-3 game. So I guess the first one was man up first, 2 outs. Alonzo's at the plate. First pitch of the at bat, let's see. Okay,
he balks.
He comes set enough. Okay, like there are half the fucking guys in the big leagues that come set less than that.
And tell our audience, for a second, that where this story goes is the umpire calls, balks a guy over to second, balks a guy to third, and then calls a balk for him home, all on the same movement. Yeah.
All in the same move. In the same at bat. So you're supposed to have, if you're not watching, you're supposed to have a deliberate pause in between your set and when you deliver the pitch to home plate. And look, like there are guys aren't coming set deliberately for like 2 or 3 seconds and then making the pitch every time. It just needs to be set and go. Set and go. If you roll through it and go, yes, that indeed is a balk. I think that these 3 balks could have easily not been called a balk if it was a different day or a different umpire. Angel Hernandez probably calls all 3 of these balks, as well as maybe 3 more. But in no way was this obvious that he didn't come set. So he ended up getting out of the inning and he gave up a run. But I think the Marlins still won. Mets tried to come back, but kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you want to call one fine and then pull a guy aside at the end or something. But yeah, nobody showed up. It's late season, and this if. 3 runs in a Mets game? Come on, guys. Come on here.
Yeah, Marlins, I don't know who that
umpire
is.
Too much at stake for this. Yeah, exactly. I saw the picture of him. I was like, that's a young whippersnapper right there. Teddy Barrett, by the way. I saw Teddy Barrett have to sort out some conflict the other day. I'm only bringing his name up because we're talking umpires. Jake, you've referenced Teddy Barrett before as like just a badass, most respected guy because he was like a professional boxer or something before, and he's like 6'6 behind the plate. Where's the old school blazer? I'm just bringing this up because I did see it was like a week ago. I saw a clip in real time of Teddy Barrett sorting out some conflict on the field, and the level of respect the players had for the guy were like, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Everybody loves Teddy Barrett. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the nicest guys, one of the nicest umpires, nicest guys you're going to meet. I mean, he's been umpiring forever. Loved having him on the field. Never had any issue with him. Had some, I actually typed in Teddy Barrett. It came up pornographic film director or film actor.
Okay,
and that's the wrong.
Well, that's the internet, man. That's just a search. That's what. Well, your algorithms could be. Your algorithms could be tuned in, pal.
Well, so everyone calls him Teddy Bear, but it's Ted. So okay, mistakes were made. See, but yeah, he's a training partner for several heavyweight boxers. And, just a good man.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Glasnow's coming back.
Glasnow's back. I mean, couldn't be at a better time either. You know, and he's just electric. Good looking
and
dude.
And it doesn't sound huge. Like McClanahan is going to be out for a long time, or is that was a serious, right? He's just ready. He'll be, I mean, I can't say 100%, but it sounds like if the playoffs started, you know, tomorrow, that the Rays would be, what can I say, full strength, even though he's had a couple dust-ups in September? Even though Glasnow is just coming back, like, can we say they're not full strength, but, like, everybody's at the party. Like, maybe the guys are, like, a little hungover or something, but, like, the boys are together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge boost. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to be in – maybe not in midseason form, but when you are when you're this close to the postseason, he's been kind of watching and kind of grinding all year to get healthy. He might just look like he's in postseason form as soon as he comes back. That's kind of what I expect from him. I know the kind of mentality he has. He knows his body extremely well. I mean, he's just an unbelievable athlete. He's dialed in his delivery. And he's going to be pitching for a postseason team. That's why I think you might see Glasnow at his best kind of, you know, right away, just about. So, it wouldn't surprise me if he comes out just throwing up zeros right away.
And I think in a world of nasty pitchers, it should be made very clear that Tyler Glasnow is one of the nastiest. I know we all – every day you log on to Twitter, social media, you just see highlights of, like, did you see this guy? Did you see this guy? Did you see this pitch? And when it comes to the shock and awe of watching highlights of sliders or just – 100-mile-an-hour fastballs at letters. It's hard to beat Tyler Glasnow's shock effect. The guy's just an absolute fucking stud.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, if the Blue Jays are matched up against them, it's gonna be hard to beat them twice in a 3-game series.
Would you go into a 3-game series rather have, let's just say, that lineup, the Thunder, the Springers, and the Vlads and the Bo Bichettes of the world, or would you rather have, would you rather have the McClanahan, Glasnow, Raz?
Yeah. Every day of the week, and I think most people would say the same thing. I mean, great pitching in October always beats good hitting. And not even in October, the entire season. Understanding how difficult hitting is, and then to have guys like that with that sort of stuff and the pitchability – I mean, if their command is on, you know, they might not get scored on at all. You know, if they're limiting the walks, you know, getting ahead, you know, not nibbling, not being too fine around the zone, yeah, they're going to give up some hits. But I'd say 9 out of 10 people you ask are going to take elite arms over elite bats any day.
Also interesting, the trend for guys to get better when they come back from Tommy John. Not everybody, but when we were younger, it was like a, ooh, that's bad. Now it seems like
it's gotten so much better.
It's like, wait a second, you just have an opportunity to rehab and come back and get your velocity and your strength and your legs under you.
And they have so many different ways now to do the surgery. I think they use, and they still might do this, they'll take the ligament out of your opposite arm or one of your knees and, you know, put that, reinforce your ligament in the elbow and kind of anchor it down. I believe now they have the ability to use like some sort of like carbon fiber, like type of ligament that they're using to kind of wrap around your ligament and then anchor down like to the anchor points. So there's, you know, the advancements in, you know, orthopedic surgeries. It just seems to just steadily increase year after year. The more that we learn, and it's kind of amazing how smart people are to figure out these things, and just to make guys' ability to come back even stronger, better than ever. So yeah, in the past, let's say a decade ago, Tommy John was a much scarier, proposition for a guy. And then, Daniel Hudson, I know he's had at least two Tommy Johns. I don't know.
Played golf this summer, actually.
Yeah. I think there's even a couple guys that have had three, which is just crazy. And it's so demoralizing to, you go through that year of recovery and then you have it again and then, not knowing if you're going to come back healthy. But for the most part, I'd say that TJ now is a pretty routine surgery, even though the recovery period is, I'd say, anywhere from 10 to 13 months. But Glasnow, I'm not exactly sure when he got hurt last year, but,
surgery in August.
A year. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, right around a year recovery. And with a guy like that throws that hard and who's, your ace or one of your aces, you're going to take it a little bit slower, especially if, your team is able to find its way into the position they're in without having to rush him back.
Well, it certainly looks like the wild card in the American League is kind of setting itself up. I mean, barring, again, catastrophic disaster from the Mariners, but with those seats being the Blue Jays 4, the Rays 5, and the Mariners 6, meaning that the Mariners would play the Guardians and the Blue Jays and the Rays would play each other. I think the Blue Jays, Rays, I think that's a three-game series. I think that's an electric one. I think those are all very close games, obviously. Just how often they played each other this year, I like that. I like when teams play each other in the playoffs.
The 2015 year when you guys
played the Pirates and the Cardinals, that was special. Their record head-to-head, yeah. I think, is even. I think it's pretty even.
Okay. Yeah, they're extremely familiar with each other. So there's really no secrets there. It'll be interesting to see how they decide to match guys up.
And next week, obviously, we'll have more, like, I'll have my full prediction and team previews. But the Rays, too, though, they just have had a sense that their ability to play so freely throughout the year, I just never sense that the Rays play with pressure in October. I feel like every bullpen guy wants to come in there. I feel like they are – the second that game starts, every reliever is ready to come in if there's three pitches in the game. I mean, they can't, obviously, three batter minimum, but.
Yeah, and it's a culture thing, too, with teams like that.
Fuck yeah.
They're not, it's.
It's not accidental.
It's just another. Yeah, it's a bigger stage, but they're not approaching the game any differently. And for a lot of teams, it's like, okay, guys, it's the postseason. We got to do this. We got to do that. No, you need to show up. You need to prepare. You need to get your mind focused on the task at hand and go about your business. And the Rays do that. The Cardinals do that. The Astros do that. The Braves, the Dodgers. And that's why they're just consistently in the same positions they are. Once you approach October every single year.
I saw a study the other day that I thought found interesting. Apparently the Rays have more front office analytic people than any other organization. The Dodgers are second. So the Rays have like 40, and then the Dodgers have like 33 or 34. The Cubs have 20. I mean, there's some teams that only have like 5 or 6. But the Rays have 40, which I find, again, it's not a coincidence that they're in it every single year, that they have great makeup and where'd this guy come from over and over and over again. So get credit to them. And then the matchup against them with the Blue Jays where they go get George Springer, they bring up their prospects and the studs. They spend the money on Kevin Gausman. They develop Alec Manoah. They finally have a raucous playoff crowd to play again in front of.
I mean, it's
completely different ends of the spectrum to me, both teams coming in here.
It's about time, and I could be a little off here, but it seems like the Blue Jays haven't really done a great job at developing pitching historically in the past. Like as you mentioned, developing Alec Manoah. I mean, who's the last –
he was 12th overall, by the way. I mean,
he was one of the best pitching prospects. Well, you still got to develop him. I mean, he's right. There's still things he's got to work on and fine tune before he's ready to pitch at the level he's pitching at in the big leagues. But outside of him, I mean, who's the last elite arm that they've developed?
Marcus Stroman. And that gets into the debate of, like, do you want to sit here and say, I think that Marcus Stroman, when healthy and in good circumstances, is a, you know, is a fine competitive starting pitcher and can make quality pitches. But do I think that he's on in the conversation to say elite? No. I mean,
yeah,
no.
And that's nothing against him. Like, look, there's only a...
But to answer your question the way you're looking for it, no. Yeah.
Right. So...
Like, Manoah, to me, is will be going into next year in that discussion based on the body of work. He's going to throw over 200 innings or in and around there, which is kind of like, you know, a big mark now. He's going to pitch to a sub-2.5 ERA. He kind of – I'm not saying he's elite. He's earning the right where, like, he could be considered one of those guys, even though I guess he is now. He could go out – See, it's a fickle thing to categorize, like, aces and elite and top of the – that's why it's like you know what a number one is when you see it. And I think Alek Manoah can be that guy. I just think he has to – you know, he comes out and shoves in October, and then he's walking around next year. I think it's just like there is another –
He's on the radar. He's on the radar, yes. Like you said, and his name will most certainly be more a part of that conversation. And that's – you know, and some guy, you know, yeah. You need – it's like your coming out party, guys – have a really nice year, and yeah, he'll get. I don't know if he wins the Cy Young, but I mean he's going to get votes, and then you know the expectations just slowly and steadily, you know, become a little bit more and more and more.
And then meanwhile, Kevin Gausman had just this is a quick thing I thought was interesting. He had mentioned that the balls for Aaron Judge now that he's in the home run chase, MLB's making him use special balls. And that there's something weird about it or it just didn't feel right. Now, I don't know if that's because the balls are different or because they're specialized balls. They're not rubbed or treated with the same group of balls that the umpires would be using. Or I just – anytime they change equipment, it just – I don't like it. Just stop doing it.
Well, they're going to continue to do it, whether players like it or not.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll never know until at least until after the fact. Then somebody says something or somebody does a study. And I think guys are okay with it if you just say, hey, this is what we're doing. It's not like there's anything we can do about it anyways. But it is what it is. But as far, you know, I was talking for a long time about how Spencer Strider is guaranteed rookie of the year. This oblique thing hurts. Michael Harris is playing so good. You know, he's probably going to win rookie of the year. Which very, very deserving. I think the American League side of it is pretty obvious as well. That's pretty much locked up. But man, it's just, I love seeing, you know, such a nice group of rookies. It's just, it's good for the game. Good for the game to see young players like this having so much success this early.
Yeah, because if you go back, I mean, there are some Rookie of the Year award winners where you're like, all right, maybe it wasn't a great crop that year. Maybe it was just, you know, circumstances. And then there's other times when you have rookies come on the scene, you're like, holy smokes, like Aaron Judge in 2017. Obviously, I mean, Jacob deGrom in 2014. A former shortstop in college?
Yeah. Homered off Chris Sale.
We should bring up, we talk about it a little bit with the King of JUCO. He talks some shit about Stetson. I'm coming back. I'm saying Stetson's still legit. Stetson pumps out top rotation guys.
Corey Kluber.
Corey Kluber's legit, man. Still doing it.
He's legit.
Game one and game four of the World Series is some of the most unhittable stuff I saw in 2016.
Kluber made three starts in the World Series.
Balls dragon.
Yeah, right? You see Helsley. 104.4 miles per hour. 104.4.
Is that real? Are they just juicing him?
Dude, I don't think so. I think it's legit. And it was against, he was facing Rowdy Tellez, and it was a ball at the very bottom of the strike zone. Middle zone down. I mean, he just hits a ground ball to second base. I mean, just, the guy's delivery. It's just, a perfectly synced up delivery, a big, strong guy, getting every single ounce of effort out of his body. And you have to in order to unleash something like that. It's just wild that human beings can throw something that hard.
So I'll be interested to see how the Cardinals use him in the playoffs too, because I think that they've been going to him more under the modern Bill James used to say, like, use your best reliever when it's time to use your best reliever. The concept of a closer
in the highest leverage situation.
Yes. And so I think that the Cardinals use him like, I shouldn't say I think, I know for a fact. He only has 18 saves, but they use him more as, all right, it's the seventh inning and there's runners on first and third and nobody out in a tie game. Come in and gas
inside. Yep.
So I think there's going to be some great moments too coming up in October, this three-game series with him coming in like the – he could be coming in like the fifth inning of game two.
Sure.
And then you just let it ride.
That's what you do in the highest leverage situation, especially in October. You put your best guy in. I mean, he's got a 1.28 ERA in almost 64 innings, and his WHIP is 0.7. So, you need big outs in a situation like you said. If you find yourself, you know, first and third or second and third, no outs, one out. I mean, you put in a guy that throws 104 miles an hour. And not only that, like there's a lot of guys that throw hard, but his success and his ability to get outs, you know, and just to stack up, you know, zeros with that kind of stuff. It's hard to say you would go to anybody else but him in a situation like that. And I'm trying to see how many walks he's got.
19 walks in 63 walks. Innings, yeah.
I mean, that's, 4.9 strikeout to walk ratio. That's pretty good.
And about 40% of his appearances are going longer than an inning. Should say less than that, about a third of them, which is interesting to me. Again, the way these, like, guys that throw 105 – okay, I shouldn't say these guys. There's only one of them, and he hasn't hit 105. But the way the late-game reliever's been developed, and I like the fact that the Cardinals, to me, I know other people have done it, but this one jumps out as, like, we're just going to – high leverage. Now, compare that. Kimbrel walked in the game-winning run for San Diego last night. They have I think it's a one-and-a-half game lead. Kimbrel's a guy who's historically said, don't put me in unless it's a safe situation. I don't want to pitch in a game unless it's a safe. If it's a safe situation, I will be like Hall. He hasn't said this, but it's the mentality of in a safe situation. He knows he's like a first ballot Hall of Fame closer, but that's the mindset he goes to. And it's well recorded that Kimbrel is uncomfortable pitching in those situations. And the Dodgers they came out and were like, he's not going to close for us anymore. They said that publicly. They've tried, I think, talk to him about it. He was in the situation last night, and it's just tough seeing a guy like that struggle in these situations.
Especially
is very hard.
A guy who has virtually never struggled. He had a tough year. What was it, in 20 with the Cubs, 19, whatever it was, but – you know, for like 11 straight years, it was just dominance. So, yeah, it's tough to see, but it happens to everybody. I think that, his stuff, maybe a tick down, stuff is still good. I mean, I think it's mainly command, and everything's magnified when you're coming in to get three outs and you can't command the ball. You're erratic around the strike zone, and when you are in the zone, you're getting hit a little bit. So, yeah, I hate to see it for him, but you know the Dodgers, and I saw somebody mention like maybe he doesn't even make the postseason roster, which I think is crazy to even say.
I mean, if you look at their bullpen, they don't have the best starting pitching depth. Not the best top guys, I'd say, but if you want to take an entire pitching, like the entire starting depth there, you know, obviously the most balanced lineup, one of the most historic run differentials. But if you're going into a seven-game series and you don't have two guys at the end of your bullpen where you're like, hey, I know no matter what, we can go to these guys. And maybe it's one guy who's complete shutdown and then a handful of really, really solid The fact that the Dodgers do have a big question mark around the back of their bullpen, and I don't even know if I'm going to say big question mark, but relative to the rest of the team.
Yeah, it's basically the only question mark, but may not even matter if they just outscore everybody by 4 or 5 runs, which is possible.
Yeah, it's just now that I do want to talk about the Mets and the Braves series that's coming up this weekend that ties together with the Dodgers. But first, now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. More athletes are speaking out about the importance of mental health, but you don't have to be a pro to want to be at the top of your game. Everyone needs to take care of their mental well-being, whether you're an athlete or not. Therapy is the best way to stay in peak mental shape. I know from my days competing at the University of Illinois, sit down with our doc all the time, every week, Brent Walker. Shout out to Brent Walker. I love this man. And we talk so much about the head game, competing, expectations. Why do you put so much expectations on yourself? Why do you think you can do all this? I'm telling you right now that there is absolutely no way that I get to be able to play at any type of high level without having these conversations, growing as an adult, as a man. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, accessible, affordable, and entirely online. You get matched with a therapist after filling out a brief survey, and switch therapists anytime. Very convenient. If you guys are ready, I encourage you to feel at the top of your mental health game. Therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/starting today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/starting for 10% off your first month. If you've been on the fence, guys, let me be the one to give you that final nudge. Give therapy a try. This is as sincere as I get in Barstool stuff. Visit BetterHelp.com/starting today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/starting. We have an interview with the King of JUCO we're going to get to in a little bit. There's a couple more things that obviously touching this weekend and the Braves and the Mets series. There's some chatter if they were going to move it to Texas. You talked like if you were going to go. I don't know if, Colin, do we have an update on what the rumor is of whether or not they're going to be playing this game? I know that there's.
It might be a little noisy here because I'm in the office, but.
Out for you, yeah.
No, official update yet. I think they said they're definitely not going to be moving it. The options that I don't know why they won't do is play Thursday. We both have an off day. Move the game up earlier Friday. It looks like Saturday's not going to happen and have the final game on Sunday because I don't want them playing a doubleheader on Sunday. And then the other option they gave is to play on the 6th. Which is the day before the playoffs start, which is ridiculous because one of these teams is going to have to play a wild card game. So it's a mess right now. They haven't given any like official word on it, but MLB is dealing with a mess right now.
Yeah, this is a tough situation for MLB too. And historically, when they have tough situations, people love to moan and bitch about how they didn't handle it correctly. But it definitely sucks. It definitely sucks that this is the biggest regular season weekend Major League Baseball can stand behind in so long. That Sunday night baseball game, if it went as planned, the Mets and Braves scheduled to play Sunday night baseball, like that, that's as good as, it's like, I shouldn't say, it's a tick below an elimination game in the playoffs. Because those motherfuckers are going to be playing as hard as they've played all year. They've been playing their dicks off.
It would be an amazing game. And, Colin, so I don't think they have a mutual – you said mutual off day. I don't think that they want because the Braves will be traveling, you know, from Washington back home.
We'd both
they
be
want
traveling.
The players to have that off day. Right. But I just think that they want those teams to have that off day, I believe. But, man – that Sunday night game, oh goodness! Like, if it comes down to it, I don't know like you said, it's just as good as an elimination game in the postseason.
We'll see. Weather's tough, man. Mother Nature. It's just funny. 162 games comes out of this. Oh no, bad rain. God bless this sport. God bless it. Pitching matchups wise, I think that everything to me is just still – it's just a coin flip. I don't even know how anybody could look at the Braves or the Mets right now and say one team is better than the other. I mean, if Spencer Strider's out, there could be, sure, in an argument, I guess, 7 games.
I mean, it's about as even as it gets.
Yeah, it's as even as you could possibly ask for. So.
Yeah.
Do you have a prediction? Do you want to make a prediction?
That is just – They're tied right now. Obviously, in the NL East, I think it's a coin flip. I think it's just an absolute coin flip.
Come on.
You
gotta read.
So who wins the division?
They're tied right now.
I think since Strider's out, maybe it wouldn't even matter. But I'm going to say the Mets.
I, too, am going to say the Mets.
I don't know if I like that.
I think that I really do think this is such a meatball thing to say. I think Scherzer is the difference maker. I just think that guy watching every pitch in these dugouts, I just think having him in that dugout for 7 games, knowing you're going to get a start, like I don't see Scherzer like letting his boys down, and I don't even know if that makes sense. He just strikes me as the type of guy who's going to be in it so much with these guys. And from everything I've seen, learned, heard, picked up from the outside about the Mets clubhouse is that Scherzer's just been the ultimate difference maker in bringing these guys together.
He is that guy. He is that guy. But you can always get clipped.
Like
everybody is susceptible to getting clipped. No matter if it's him or Verlander or DeGrom. If things align the right way, shit happens. But I'm with you. I completely agree. He is a difference maker in a lot of ways. If there's anybody that can bring the boys together, I mean, who better than, a guy like Max? And he's just his energy, his competitiveness has obviously bred its way around that clubhouse. And, rightfully so. One of the greatest to ever do it. And he's going to be dialed in, absolutely dialed in.
Speaking of dialed in, just a couple more things here. Albert Pujols had a great, great speech to the clubhouse after the Cardinals clinched yesterday. And I've been saying this for a while now. I just want to make it clear if it's not been hammered home the audience's head yet, like get ready. Get ready for some major Cooperstown moment. That's going to be like one of the first 5 highlights you see is going to be him hitting a walk-off bomb to send the Cardinals to the next round in like the wild card or something. There's no doubt in my mind, as much as I've ever forecasted anything from the sight of baseball gods, I had touched with a vision from the baseball gods that Albert Pujols has a big thing coming. So we got to be on top of that. Everybody has to be ready for this moment. It's happening.
Yeah, we'll be ready. I'll be glued to the TV. Not going to miss a moment of that. I'm not going to miss a moment in any of the playoffs. Okay.
Have you heard any of this controversy from Mike Trout? You getting any chatter from the boys in the group chat? We have to talk about this. Some inside baseball, inside Barstool. Little bit of drama here. Mike Trout traveling on the road gets approached by 2 children in a clip. You see it on the internet, clip. And the kids are like, Mr. Trout, can you sign something for me? And he's like, sorry, kids, not today. Gets on the bus. And a guy named Jersey Jerry, who works at Barstool, had tweeted out the video and had basically said, Mike Trout doesn't sign for kids, and had some harsh takes about it. And the internet responded in kind and said, Jerry, these kids are being peddled by older men and people who seek professional autographs all the time. It's a tactic. He's not saying no to the kids. He's saying no to the person who's profiting off of child fucking labor.
Yeah, that's a
unfortunately,
fact.
Unfortunately, that clip was going around for a while. That went out at like 11 p.m. And so the watchdogs got on it first thing in the morning, and it did not sound like Dave Portnoy was too happy. There was some apologies issued. It sounded like there's some probationary or punishment or some sort of limiting behavior Dave's put in place for Jerry to tweet these type of videos out and make these type of statements. And Dave came out and said, hey, he's in the Fantasy Football League, man. What are you doing? He's wearing the flag, man. I don't know. The knee-jerk reaction is easy to be like, oh, you don't sign for kids. But, like, literally, if you just – it took 5 seconds to be like, oh, those kids are obviously – it's like the kids walking around being like, will you
they're
buy
pawns,
candy for my
They're pawns with the
team?
Adults.
Like,
right. I had an – just real quick, I had an instance with a guy in Boston. Walked to dinner with a couple guys, walking back to the hotel at about 11:30, and a guy has his son, or I'm assuming it's his son, with him, waiting outside the hotel. I'm in a conversation with the boys, whatever. Kind of walk past him. He kind of yells at me, and he goes, "Hey, you're not going to fucking sign for the kid?" And so I walked over to him. I walked over to the kid, and I looked at the kid, and I said, "Do me a favor. Do not grow up to be like your dad." And I just walked off. It's 11:30. It's 11:30 on a Tuesday, and he's got his kid, you know, with him outside the team hotel. You know what I mean? So that indeed happens all the time, way too often. But anytime there are kids there that want autographs, more than happy to sign for all the kids.
I played golf with the Angels last year. They were in town, and their hitting coach is buddies with a buddy of mine from around town. And so we go out to the club, play some golf. We get on the team bus from the hotel in the morning. We all meet at the team hotel, go out, we play golf. There's like a group of 10 guys, me and my buddy. And then we come back to the team hotel. The Angels have a game that night. They're playing the White Sox. So we're probably back at the team hotel like, I don't know, 2 o'clock. Or maybe it was an off day. Who cares? Point is this. We got back to the hotel at like 2, 3 o'clock. Mike Trout was nowhere near our party, had nothing to do with the group of players we were with or any of the itinerary. When we got off the little bus and with like the golf clubs and we're getting back to the hotel, there had to be 50 Angels fans standing on the sidewalk holding Mike Trout, only Mike Trout stuff, memorabilia, jerseys, because I guess it's a hard autograph to get. I'm not too familiar with this stuff, obviously. And the commentary from, I think it was like the bullpen catcher, was like, literally everywhere we go, regardless of what time, regardless of the circumstance, there are always people around the Angels organization trying to get a look at Mike Trout, trying to get him to sign something.
Yeah, all the time. It's got to be really overwhelming. It's got to be super hard for, you know, guys like Trout, Harper, you know, Chris Bryant, you know, the biggest stars in the game, Judge. Yeah, because everywhere you go, and unfortunately, like, guys will follow you. Guys will follow. When you leave the hotel, it happened to me before. Like, I can't imagine how it happens to Trout and Judge and guys like that. When they leave the hotel, guys will literally follow you if you're going to lunch or you're walking with your family. It's like, man, when I leave the hotel, like, and I decide not to sign, do not follow me. I have a big problem with that, especially if I'm with, you know, my wife and kids. Like, don't do that.
Yeah, the fact that they want something, like wanting something from, it's not just like, hey, man, you know, I'm a big fan. You guys do a great job. Hey, I was at that one game, or I was in Los Angeles when you threw the no-hitter. Like those moments, I want to share something personal with you. But just like, I want to take something from you. I need this from you. That's where the relationships get tough. That's where I think it would be difficult as a superstar. But, you know. Probably doesn't hurt being it's a trade-off.
It is a trade-off, but I guess you expect people to have a little more feel sometimes, you know, but they, guys like that, they seem like they're untouchable, which, you know, they rightfully so. I mean, you shouldn't have, you know, complete access to players whenever you want it. Just like, yeah. No, nobody should have complete access to anybody, you know, whenever they want it, you know, let alone a guy who, who's a superstar in his field. You know, it's like we like our privacy, you know, and sometimes people have a hard time understanding that.
People are like, I cheered for you. I watched you and cheered.
And we're very grateful for that. Like, but we don't, okay. You know, sometimes we don't want to be hounded.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. So the guy we're going to talk to in a little bit, Eric Sim, King of JUCO, he would probably love to get hounded. He'd probably sit and sign autographs for he'd probably be signing autographs for as long as anybody ever wanted to sign autographs.
I believe
this guy
he would.
Loves the action. I don't know if anybody loves to be, and we'll get into these stories. This guy's out here doing velocity training. He's throwing fruit. Bagels. I saw yesterday, or yeah, a video on YouTube. He like hand shaved a piece of wood into a large bat, just like made a handmade bat, and then got in a cage and was taking.
Damn. Did he put it on a lathe and like turn it, or did he do it all by hand?
No, it's like very rough looking. This seems like he took an axe to it.
I like that.
Gets in the cage, hacks at. There was a guy in the NFL who was going viral because he was on the Detroit Lions for like 6 years, finally got his first career start. They gave him a game ball. I think it was like George Springer, Stinger, or something like that. Disrespectful for me not knowing this guy's name. But journeyman NFL offensive lineman. And so he was going viral on the internet a couple weeks ago for, I don't know, big emotional speech from Dan Campbell after the Lions won their first game of the season or something. They gave him the game ball. That dude just a couple months ago was in Sims' lab taking hacks off a tee, working on his exit velocity. And there's a video of him getting it up to like 116, 117 off a tee. I'm like watching the video of him getting the game ball. I'm like, this guy looks so – this NFL player looks so familiar. Why is it? It's because he's training in the offseason with Sim and his velocity stuff, doing the JUCO – how hard, how far. Like, that's all these guys care about. How far can you hit stuff? How hard can you throw stuff? And just, like, all gas, all intensity. You guys probably seen some of this. Some of the cultures kind of around, like, the drive line mentality, I would say, but just, like, a little bit more fun. He's a guy who goes around and just, like, challenges random strangers to throwing contests. If you're familiar with White Sox Dave, think of, like, if White Sox Dave had a YouTube channel where all he did was just ridiculous baseball contests. That is Eric Sim, the king of JUCO. We're going to talk to him. In the same vein, though, foul boy. Profane mouth. I don't know if I've talked to anybody with a profane. I have to say this up front, and it's not a criticism towards his character, but from the perspective of listening to the amount of F words is borderline impressive, really.
Yeah, it's just him. He's letting it fly. So,
yeah. We say that because we're conscious. We keep a swear jar in the Chicago office. You and I.
Yeah, it keeps you accountable. Keeps you accountable. Yeah.
We're gonna have a great interview coming up. We talk a lot about the culture. This is for like diehard baseball guys. This is very much, especially we want to welcome all of Eric Sim's friends from the King of JUCO page here. You guys are going to get to know a little bit behind the scenes of what makes one of the internet's most interesting baseball content creators tick. And needless to say, it's a unique blend of personality, experience, culture, and just a guy who fucking wants to get after it. So let's get to Eric Sim, the King of JUCO. But first, I want to thank EveryPlate. EveryPlate, fall is finally here, which means back to routine, back to busy schedules, and back to the best time-saving hack for weeknight dinners. EveryPlate. We've talked a lot about managing, you know, your workload, your tasks coming in and out. This is the time of the season. A lot of sales guys out there got to crunch the numbers. Football's back. Everybody's just busy. It's a busy time of the season. EveryPlate's quality ingredients come pre-portioned to help you save money and reduce food waste. This is a very easy way to prepare dinner at home. Don't turn to takeout when things get hectic. Instead, get EveryPlate delivery. It's 58% cheaper than your average fast casual meal, and you can always feel good about what you're eating. Not only is EveryPlate a great way to eat affordably, it tastes great too, with recipes like Super Smash Burgers, Ponzu Chili Steak Bowls, and Creamy Lemon Herb Chicken. You can find new favorites to make regular in your dinner rotation. Get everything you need for the week delivered at the same time with new extras to complement your weekly order. Get extras like Vanilla Delight Cheesecake, sweet kale salad, garlic bread, and protein bundles to take things up a notch. I'll tell you guys right now, we've talked about this before. We'll talk about it again. You're going to hear this message time and time again. Start making food for yourself. Get in the kitchen. Don't be a bitch and get takeout every single time you're under stress and pressure just because it's easy. Don't do that to yourself. You're going to be a bag of shit. You're going to feel bad. You want to feel good about yourself. Take control of the kitchen. That's a great place to start. That's why we recommend EveryPlate. Get started with EveryPlate for just $1.49 per meal on your first box by going to EveryPlate.com and entering code STARTING149, because your first meal is only $1.49, which is cheaper than anything you're going to find anywhere else. So don't even make the argument that it's cost effective to get takeout. It's not. It's $1.49 here with EveryPlate. All you have to do is go to EveryPlate.com and enter code STARTING149. That's code STARTING149 at EveryPlate.com. All right, it's time to talk to King of JUCO, Eric Sim. Jake, any commentary before we get to this? Lass.
No, the interview with Eric was great. You know, I love his passion for the game. I like how he's, you know, spreading, you know, popularity of the game of baseball in unusual ways, but ways that are, you know, captivating and get guys interested. And he's also done a lot, you know, for helping guys, you know, get jobs who are, you know, free agents looking for work. So he's doing a lot of, you know, a lot of positive things along with, you know, the craziness that he's kind of a part of. So anything that kind of, you know, spreads, you know, the love of the game of baseball, I'm all for it. And he's definitely a guy who has a tremendous passion for the game of baseball.
All right. I couldn't say it any better myself. Let's get to this jabroni. Let's get to the King of JUCO. Here he is, Eric Sim. All right, we're in the interview portion of today's show. We are joined by internet sensation, great baseball content creator, the King of JUCO, Eric Sim. Eric, thanks for joining us. Are you in the lab right now? Are you in the gym lifting weights? What are you doing?
I wish I was at the gym fucking lifting some heavy-ass weight for no reason. But, I mean, right now I'm at the little streaming room I got over here. This is where I do all my MLB The Show streaming right now. So, yeah, man.
And a lot of people, obviously, you have a tremendous following on YouTube. Congratulations on the 100,000 subscriptions and the plaque. We're waiting for ours to come in. And so, like, to our audience that isn't familiar with the King of JUCO, like, how do you brand yourself? How would you explain yourself? You're in an airport. Someone's like, hey, let me buy you a drink. What the fuck do you do for work? How do you explain what you do?
I basically throw random shit as hard as possible. I recently threw a bagel at 90 miles an hour, so fucking why not, right? And then I also hit as hard as possible for no reason. I'm washed up. I'm not going to play no more. But I still fucking grab a Beezer bat and pop like 110X of velo on both sides of the plate. And then I also lift heavy as weight just for fun, you know, and I just enjoy training part of baseball. I'm washed up. I never made it to the big leagues. I was a minor league nobody, you know, but when I got done playing, I was like, you know, like I enjoy training. I want to continue training. And that's what I thoroughly enjoy doing, even though it sucks. I love the process of it. I'm sure, Jay, you can attest to it a little bit too. Like, I mean, when you see yourself get better, right? I mean, it's just fun, you know? So, like, when you see the numbers or whatever you're chasing, see those numbers go up, it's pretty fun. So that's basically what I do. Basically, full sand, rip some smelly salt, and do shit as hard as possible.
Well, training's got to be a big part of what you do, because if you're after numbers, exit velocity, miles per hour, you know, on the mound, now, does it? I mean, it's got to feel a little bit like work for you, but I know you enjoy it. And I was curious, how long and how old are you currently?
I'm 33.
So you got a lot of time ahead of you. But have you ever thought about like,
I don't know,
man,
about that?
How much longer can I continue to do this kind of stuff at max effort? Do you want to do it for as long as you can? Okay, while you're enjoying it.
Yeah. So for me, right. So I mean. So first of all, like when you're like, hey, like, does it feel like work or anything? It doesn't. And that's why, like, I feel like I got this dream job thing, which is on YouTube. But now before this, when I just got done playing about baseball, I got a real job, you know, that's why, because I was broke as fuck and never made it to the show or anything like that. So I got a job as a bartender. I worked as a bar manager for about 4.5 years to make ends meet or whatever. But I mean, I wasn't that happy. You know, I wasn't happy of doing what I was doing. You know, bar business. I'm sure, Carl, you've been fucked up at a bar multiple times. I mean, it's a pretty brutal scene when you deal with it every fucking day, you know? So, and I was fucking kicking jabronis out of the bars, you know, like, fuckers are doing drugs and shit on my bar, and it was just miserable, you know. So I was like, fuck this, I'm done. And then when I got done, I came down here to the States. I moved in with my wife, and then I'm just gonna do something that I enjoy doing, which was like training. And by that time I had a little bit of following, so I'm like, let's make something out of it. And then luckily with a momentum, they were nice enough to offer me a job, and I've been with them since. So
yeah. So tell me a little bit now, when you talk about your work, you know, you talk about exit velocity, just hitting shit far, hitting it hard, throwing gas. And so, like, you are on the far end of the spectrum to me as embracing the new wave of baseball, where it's like, dude, just fucking hit it as hard as you can, throw gas, like, beat, which I'd like to say again is on a very far end of the baseball spectrum. How would you explain exit velocity and launch angle to a moron like me?
You are a moron. I'm just kidding. But so exit velocity, it's very simple, man. People like overcomplicate things, right? Exit velocity and fucking launch angle, these crazy names and the people are throwing out these days. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is when you hit the ball fucking hard, it's good for you. When you throw the ball harder, it's most likely going to benefit you. Does that make sense? So I'm sure, Jake, it's a little bit easier to pitch when you're throwing 95, 97. Instead of fucking 88, 90, you know what I'm saying? So again, it just makes your job a little bit easier. But for me, for what I'm trying to do with content, I mean, no one's going to watch what I'm doing when I'm throwing fucking 80, you know what I'm saying? That's why when I get on the mound, I recently did mound velo. I got to 91, almost hit 92, that kind of stuff. And exit velo, I'm hitting 108 to 110 with wood. I've been up to 116 with a Beezer bat, you know, those old fucking juice bats or whatever. So yeah, man, again, I enjoy doing the whole process of the training and fucking putting up crazy numbers. Even lifting, you know, like, it's not like I'm fucking jacked or anything, but like I'm big. and I want to be strong. I love being strong. I hate being fucking weak because I think that's fucking soft. So when I'm squatting 550, deadlifting 615. Like, you know, like, I don't want to be a bitch. You know, that's basically what it is.
And how much do you think, like with what you, with what you've done and the guys that you've trained and worked out with, how much have you seen in a positive way, kind of helping guys out, kind of learning about, you know, exit velo and actually taking it seriously? Because like a lot of the old guys, like they really, they didn't care much about it, but there is a lot to it. And especially now with these rule changes, with the shift being taken away, this is going to help guys out a lot. So in your experience, and as long as you've been doing this, have you changed some guys' minds or at least made people look at it a little bit more in depth?
Yeah. I mean, even I have a lot of pro guys that are right now playing pro ball that hit me up. And of course, like, it's more of my content is more for entertainment, right? So I provide a lot of entertainment value. But I mean, some of them like, oh shit, you know, like, I mean, if I can train exit velo, right? And then get my exit velo from, I was sitting like 98, 97, 98 to popping like 106, 107 off a tee. They're like, okay, well, if I can do it, I'm fucking washed up. It's not like I'm training every single day like they were, you know what I'm saying? So they're like, oh, I can benefit. Like, what are you doing? Like, they ask questions. And when I show them, like, oh, this is what I do. And I'm very transparent when it comes to my training stuff. I tell my social media everything, you know, this is all I'm doing. And whatever I come up with is what I come up with. And I did a fun little project called 95 or Die last year or year before. And I literally went from, like, I just got on the mound, threw like 86, 85, 86. And from that day on, I'm like, fuck this. I want to pump 95 just for fun, not just for myself. And then I journeyed every single day, and it took me 151 days, which is like just over 4 months of consist. Like, I was went to the gym every single day, you know, throwing every single day outside of bar managing, you know. So, and I ended up hitting 95, you know, in 151 days. So again, it's all on what you're doing in terms of like what you're training. Of course, Jake, you'll know more about me than this, but it's just when you put in your mind to something, right? If you're focusing on velo per se, right? And then you need to just work your training and life around that, right? And we have a lot of pro guys that can be training this offseason too. Some of them, they don't need velo. They're already throwing fucking 97, 98. So, and you have a shitty breaking ball. They need to develop an elite breaking ball. Then what are you going to do? Your whole training for the offseason going to go around exactly what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? So, I think that's the biggest difference of having one focus. You can't just try to fix fucking 10 different things at once. That's just not how it works. So
what's the relationship? How's our guy Trevor Bauer doing? I know you guys do a lot of content together. That was like a name that really popped up when you were starting to do your YouTube to just as like a level of, you know, credibility or whatever in the industry. Cause he's a very advanced guy when it comes to getting out on the mountain and stuff. How's that relationship going? We're excited to see him pitch whenever he gets back.
Yeah. Good. He's doing good. He's obviously planning to pitch next year. And we'll see what happens, you know. But other than that, I mean, he's right now focused on, of course, the YouTube content side of things and his own training. I recently faced him in live ABs indoors, and he fucking every time he throws against me, he fucking like throws gas. You know, like whenever he faces anybody else, it's like 90, 91. He faced me 94, 95. He touched 95.3 in an indoor mount. So usually he'll do like 2-3 miles or higher on a real mount. Jake, I don't know if you're the same way, throwing depending on like indoor mount or outdoor mount, but I'm usually outdoor mount, adrenaline in season. People tend to throw harder. Even myself, when I throw like 92 in here, I'm usually like 93, 94 and on a game, on a mount. So,
well, yeah, a lot of that's going to depend on who's in the box. Like if you're in the box, you right. Talk a lot of shit.
I do talk a lot of shit.
So I, you know, there's a little more on the line. He's trying to get you out. I mean, we're all excited to see, you know, Trevor pitch again. Love the content you guys do. And honestly, I think it brings a lot more fans to the game. Like people who have a hard time watching, you know, baseball games every single night, but they're on YouTube kind of watching what you guys are doing, making it much more entertaining and much more fun. So when did you start doing this? How many years ago?
I've been doing this for about a year and a half, like full time about a year. So very new to it still. The growth has been obviously like grateful. Like I'm just still like riding it out. You know, I'm like, I don't know when this is going to stop. I might get canceled. Who the fuck knows? I'm just going to ride it until I can't ride it no more. But it's fun, man. It's been fun. But I moved here a year and a half ago. to the States. And then I haven't became full time for about a year. So I've been doing this full time for about a year as a YouTuber, content creator slash whatever the fuck you want to call me. And I'm enjoying it, man. I'm sure look at you guys. You guys are doing this content thing too, like podcasts. Like, you love doing it, right? Like, it's not like you're forced to do it. You know, you do it because you enjoy doing it. So
yeah, the game brings it out of us. The game, there's something about the game where, like, to your point, I'm washed. You think you're washed? I'm washed, pal. I didn't even get a chance to, like, you know, swing the wooden bat or, you know, get on those bus rides and stuff. But to that extent, loving the game, bringing us back. So now watching, was there a video that you popped off? Like, I know you hit a bomb off Trevor Bauer, but what was, like, the video that, like, really kind of sent you going here? Like, was there an interaction or something where you're like, oh, I'm onto something?
That's the thing with YouTube. Like, when, like, one of your video pops off, right? Like, and then all these other videos will pop up out of nowhere. So my first video that went off on YouTube was I threw a bunch of fucking random fruit, like, out of nowhere. I just did it in some shitty fucking park in Canada. There's, like, it was in a baseball field. It was just terrible. And I just went through, like, 20 different fruits. I was basically drinking beer the whole time, like, whatever, fuck it. And I did it. And then when a video, like, after, like, I don't know, 3-4 months, they're out of all of a sudden, it started taking off. I'm like, what the fuck's going on? And then when that started taking off, I talked about minor league pay. The video started just going fucking crazy, and that video started taking off. And then my 151 day journey to 95 or die started. So all these little things, like, kind of took off. They didn't take off, like, right away, you know, like, I mean, that's not how YouTube works. It takes time, and you just need to put in content as often as possible. And then just, like, some will click and boom, boom, boom. And now that's how the algorithm works. But yeah, there wasn't, like, one video that really popped off, but as soon as I got to the States, so of course I was doing stuff with Trevor, and then I was doing a lot of stuff with pros. All the pros live in I live in Scottsdale, and a lot of pro baseball players live here. So I was linking up with a bunch of them, and then those videos started to take off. So
what's on the schedule next for you? What do you have planned content wise?
For content wise, fuck, I got a lot of dumb shit planned. I recently just threw my YouTube plaque. So I just full sand and fucking wrist and smelling salt through my YouTube silver button. Next one is going to be facing Joanne Duran. He's fucking nasty. Ryan Helsley is also on the top of the list. Hitting with we just recently got a sledgehammer. And you know those, like, kendo sticks? You know those Japanese, like, kendo sticks? We got one of those. And I'm gonna see if I can do baseball with that shit, you know. So that's what's on a plan. We usually film, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, and a lot of editing and stuff like that comes with it too. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming out.
Yeah, and you got a big presence with the junior college community too, right?
JUCO Bandits, so, baby, let's fucking go.
You're the JUCO you're like the king of junior college baseball, which we haven't really talked about or addressed that much on this show. But, like, the whole culture around baseball, there's just this massive, I'd say, like, community kind of in the shadows from the general public. When they look at baseball, they just see Major League Baseball, the College World Series every June, the Little League World Series, everybody played it as a kid. But then there is this side of it, junior college, community college, where in football or basketball, it's like, oh, that guy's a JUCO guy. Oh, what was the big story there? In baseball, I mean, some of these top JUCO teams could go out there and whoop some of these Division I teams. There's some very, very good talent in JUCO. So what is it about junior college baseball with your experience or your passion that draws you to it?
So for me, like, how I describe us is, like, we're the biggest scumbags of baseball, you know, like, JUCO Bandits. Like, we don't need much. We don't need much to survive. I went to JUCO for 2 years myself, and the 2 years I went to JUCO was the biggest fucking kick in the ass I ever had in my life, including pro ball. That really, like, changed my mindset on, like, how I look at things, not even just baseball, for, like, life in general, right? So you go to some bumfuck nowhere, usually no JUCOs are in big cities, they're fucking tiny towns, bumfuck nowhere. Mine was in Kansas, Northwest Kansas. It was a town of about 4,000 or 5,000 people. There's just school, baseball, and that's it, you know what I'm saying? And then I made the most out of that. You know, I went from out of high school, I had zero offers. I went to a high school in Canada, not heavily, you know, recruited, obviously, from Canada, especially back in the day, there's no social media. So I wasn't getting looked at. I had zero offers. I got an offer to go to the JUCO called the Kobe Community College my senior year, May of my senior year. So by the time I was done with my senior season, I kind of knew where I was going, which is, like, bad. The kids these days, fucking, they committed when they're, like, sophomores and shit. You know, it's fucking insane. So yeah, I went there, and then I'm telling you, man, the 2 years I spent in JUCO was that's why I have the mentality that I have now. Like, I'm 33, I'm washed up, and I've been through Pro Bowl and all that. But, like, the mindset I have now is earned from going through that 2 years of JUCO grind, right? So, JUCO Bandit, junior college. JUCO stands for junior college. And it's, to me, it's more than just going to a JUCO. It's more of a mindset. It's more of a survival. It's our mentality, you know. And Jake, I'm sure you've been through some rough shit in your life, right, in your career.
Like, yeah, man. That, I went to JUCO for a year, too.
Let's fucking go. We got a JUCO band.
Yeah, man. Weather for JC. And that, I was going to ask you, like, that the mindset that you have to have moving forward. Because, yeah, I mean, initially you might think it sucks to be at a JUCO. Like, I didn't get any D1 offers. But, like, how do you express that to kids, like, that might have, you know, one or two offers to a small college or a junior college? Like, how do you get over that, right? Because you got to show up, and you got to keep grinding, because you never know. Some guys might develop a little bit later. You might have an opportunity to transfer or be a late round draft pick. And as long as you got a job, you got a shot.
100%. And again, so for me, going to JUCO was not just a stepping stone. It fucking, like, I trampoline off that shit. I went from zero offers out of high school. When I got done with my sophomore showcase at a JUCO, I had 60 plus offers from D1, D2, NAIA, even D3s or whatever. All these good 4-year programs. I ended up choosing to go to USF South Florida, which at the time was a pretty good D1. And again, if out of high school, I had none of those offers, right? And after the 2 years of fucking, you know, just fucking dying, you know, like at a JUCO, like it rewarded me with so much, you know. I remember my mom called me and she's like, why the fuck is your phone bill so fucking high? Because I had an international plane because I was from Canada. And it was like $400 or $500. She's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, I'm getting all these calls from colleges. I don't know what the fuck you want me to do. Like, this is good. She's like, oh,
yeah, okay, got to take the calls.
You know, got to take the calls. Like, I'm not going to like bigly go fucking, you know, some random number I get. It's like a fucking D1 coach or D2 coach or whatever the fuck it is. And it was just a crazy time for me because I never experienced that in my life ever. I never... You know, out of high school, I was fine, but like I wasn't recruited, right? I mean, even like literally, like it's, I had none of those like people wanted you, you know? Like, I mean, I had D1 coaches calling me like every day. I remember Evansville, which is a average D1.
Purple Aces. Come on, yeah, show some respect. Purple Aces, Pete Talkus, class of 2010.
Hell yes. And their coach called me like every fucking day. St. Louis, the whatever the fuck blue that whatever the fuck thing is, Billikens. The coach called, like, and again, it's like I'm like, what is going on? Like, I've never feel so wanted. You know, it's just a crazy experience for me at the time. And again, so that's why for me, like, it worked for me, and it also worked for a lot of people. Obviously, it worked for you, Jake. Going to JUCO and almost like having that mentality of a survival mode, right? And when you're 18 out of high school, you fucking need that. I think 99% of the fucking 18-year-old kids need to get some kind of ass kicking, which is like what JUCO is. So that's why I'm a big preach for that kind of stuff. It's, again, it's more than just going to a JUCO. It's a mindset. It's a mentality type shit. So,
yeah, and not to mention too, like guys develop later. I was, you know, I'm a senior in high school. I signed to go to Oklahoma State. I was 89, 92, maybe touched 93. Got drafted late by the Reds in the 30th round or some shit like that. And I'm like, fuck, I'm not ready. I feel like I'm going to get bigger, stronger, throw harder. Like I'm going to go here. So I went to Weatherford. I started throwing 98 and I'm like, okay, like, and now I got to learn how to pitch a little bit. And when I went to the Texas Collegiate League, Schlossnagel was there from TCU. He actually saw me throw. He came to watch our closer who didn't get to pitch. I threw a shutout. Offer me a scholarship that day. So it's like you never know when it's going to happen.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you're right. You need that ass kicking, because if you've never had it, like I've seen guys get to the minor leagues and then they're in like Oregon or they're fucking somewhere in the Northeast away from home in low A or short season and they can't handle it.
They struggle, man. They struggle. And you've seen a lot too, like Jake, like a lot of high school kids that get picked, right? I mean, they're 18, 19. They're excited. Now they're good. I mean, they have tools, but they don't develop into an actual baseball player. Does that make sense? Like it's they just don't know how to ball out. Like when I say ball out, like when I mean I ball out, like not just necessarily throwing like 98, 100, like because not everyone can do that. To me, like balling out is like like knowing how to play the fucking game. You know, play the game fucking hard. Like play with your shit on the line. You know what I'm saying? But again, for me, like I've been through 6 years of pro ball. Very few people like understood that. You know, I'm not saying I was the best at it. Obviously, I never made it for a reason. But like, I don't know, the competition side of things. I just didn't see that. You know, and for me, a lot of the JUCOs I played against. One year, I played against a junior college called Howard College out of Texas. They were 58-0 that year. And they won literally every single fucking game in the season. And they lost the last game, which was like the playoffs or whatever. I'm like, what the fuck? So we played against them. They had a bunch of bounce backs from D1s, but like they were so fucking good. To me, to this day, I played against Florida when I went to USF. They were at the time number one team in the country. To me, to this day, Howard College is the best team I've ever played against in my life. You know what I'm saying? It's just fucking outrageous. Their cleanup hitter ended up going to TCU, set like a home run record. It's just crazy shit. Team was stacked. I think they had like 15 players drafted out of fucking JUCO. You know, it's just crazy stuff, man. So again, well, man, for me.
Yeah, you're right. But, so UT was notorious back in the day for signing 50, 60 dudes. And then the guys that they thought might not make the team, they'd send them to like Texarkana or a couple of these other JUCOs around the area. There's a big one in Houston. God damn it. Sanjak. A lot of them went to Sanjak.
Yeah. Well, I linked up with those guys at College World Series, JUCO World Series. They're always there. They're fucking powerhouse, dude.
And then you're playing against some of these JUCO teams. You're like, this is a D1. This is a D1 team. The starter's throwing 97 with a hammer and a split, and they got guys, you know, like Chris Davis, big lefty that was with Baltimore. He was at one of the junior colleges. I'm like, this is JUCO. But you're right, like some of that competition is just as good or better than some of the best D1 teams.
Yeah, and the culture is just about playing the game. Like those coaches, they only care about the game. The concept of like getting to a college baseball program, they're like, this is the program, and you guys go to class, and I want you guys at study hall, and we're gonna, like, junior college to me is just show up, play, you're good. The best
you
players
fucking
play.
Ball out, man.
All you guys care about is playing. That's it.
Right. And again, so it is right, close, though, Carl. Yeah, because I played in D1, man. I played against Florida. I played against fucking Ohio State. Those big schools. I mean. Dude, like JUCO fucking – some of those JUCO teams would fucking whack – that Howard team would have fucking waxed, like, I think, like, almost anybody in D1 at the time, like, when I went to the year after. Man, they were so fucking good. And no one knows who they are, obviously, because it's a JUCO. Like, you never heard of Howard College or whatever unless you go to JUCO. But, dude, I'm telling you, man, the competition is no joke. And that's another thing that opened my eyes, too. When I went there for fall ball, right, out of high school, I'm like, dude – and I got full scholarship, like full ride and everything. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna show up and I'm gonna play. I show up to fall ball. Everyone's stronger than me because I never like really lifted weights in high school. I mean, back then, Jake, I'm sure you're the same. Like, I mean, back in when I went to high school, play baseball, we were told to not lift weights. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm that era. You know, like,
yeah, don't do anything over your shoulder. Don't do bench press stuff.
Don't do any. Basically, just like. Just do a little bit, you know, just some squats or whatever, and that's it, call it a day, you know. And there's no real programs out there then. And I went to JUCO, right? And then, like, all these motherfuckers been, like, you know, 5 a.m. weights for a year. You know, I show up, I'm like, dude, like, everyone's stronger than me. Like, I'm fucking weak as fuck. And I remember fall ball, like, and in my first practice, I saw so many balls going over the fence, and I didn't hit any. And that fucking pissed me the fuck off. Ever since then, when I had that experience, I'm like, fuck everybody. I'm gonna go ball. Like, balls deep, everything out, all out, you know, practicing everything. I don't give a fuck what it takes. So I started just fucking hitting the gym with everybody. 5 a.m. weights, I'm lifting twice a day. I don't give a fuck, you know, because I was dumb. Like, whatever. I don't know what we're doing. So, yeah, man, it's a crazy experience. But for me, at the end of the day, it worked for me. And if I think back now, that's exactly what I needed when I was at 18. So.
Is there a guy in the big leagues now that you think is really doing a good job with the JUCO mentality where you're like, you know what? We talk about being a dog and showing up. Like, is there a player you follow or a couple players you're like, dude, every single day this guy goes out and he does
it? God of JUCO, man. God of JUCO is right now doing it. Right now, Albo Pujols, baby. He's the fucking god of JUCO. He's fucking doing it. He's 40 fucking two. Who knows how old he is, but it doesn't fucking matter. He's hitting tanks, 700 tanks for the boys. I mean, that's the one. He's my favorite. I mean, he's called, like, I call him the god of JUCO because, I mean, in JUCO world, I mean, he's up here, and every rest of us is down here. You know,
it's a great story too, because he was in high school in New York. I had moved to New York. He had witnessed like a violent crime or something, and the family was like, "We're getting you out of New York." There's family out in Independence, Missouri, from Oregon Trail days. If you guys are familiar with Independence, Missouri, that's where the wagon would take off. But that's where he moved to. He was so good in high. So he gets here, he's playing high school baseball. He plays his junior year. I think he had 88 plate appearances. He got like 45 intentional walks, and so they were just like, dude, you can't, like, anytime someone threw a strike, he hit like 25 homers or something in the other at bat. So they were just like, we don't know what to do with this guy. So he took classes and just got his GED and then just enrolled at like the, you know, whatever JUCO he ends up going to, and it's so big they don't know where to play him. They're just like, fine, go play shortstop. First game in junior college, he turned an unassisted triple play and hit like 2 grand slams.
No fucking way.
Just a legend, man. And they didn't even know how to scout or draft him because they were like, is this guy even real? Like, is this even?
I mean, you saw his. I think it was his high school like picture. Dude, he looks like he's 32. I think he looks 42 now. I don't know. He might be a little bit older. But what bothers me, and Carl and I were talking about this, it might have been yesterday, he's got his highest slugging percentage in the last 11 years. And everyone immediately is like, oh, he's on steroids, this and that, which pisses me off, right? Yeah, when guys have success, like people, and fucking Stephen A. Smith did it to me in 2015. Like,
really?
Come on, man. It's the highest level of sports. It is a little strange, but it's a guy that's got 700 fucking homers. He's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, and then again, like, Jake, you've been on a hot streak before. Like, dude, when you get hot, man, you just get hot. What? So look at my Pro Bowl stats. They're trash. They're fucking horrible every single year. Now, one year, I had 350. I had 350 with, like, 6 Jackson rookie ball, which at the time was, like, pretty good numbers. I was like, whatever, they're nominated, whatever the fuck it is. I ended up getting, actually, you know, the spring training, we have a meeting, and, like, you know, like, player of the whatever the fuck. Like, I won, like, one of those, like, little cash award thing. Like, I had one, like, year. Like, I don't know how to explain to you. Like, I'm the same hitter. Of course, like, made minor swing changes or whatever. But, I mean, dude, I hit 350. The rest of the fucking career, 190. You know, just like, shit the bed. They literally told me to hit 200. We'll move you out. I'm like, oh, nope. I'm just going to stay at 180. I don't want to get moved out because I fucking suck dick. Fuck me. But yeah, dude, like, sometimes you just get hot. And I think that's exactly what's happening with God of JUCO. Like, he got hot at the right time. And obviously, guy knows how to deal with pressure. He's good with that. That's why he's been so dominant for so many fucking years, because pressure don't really get to him. You know, of course, he's getting old. He's aging. He's not swinging as hard as he was doing before or whatever. But, I mean, dude, guy can still get high. He's 42. I mean, he obviously knows how to fucking hit. He's been hitting forever. Catch fire a little bit late at the end, and that's how baseball works. So,
yeah. To that point, I expect, and we talked yesterday, I do expect him to have some big moment in October. You know, it's absolutely not just like, I know it's absolutely like 700 home runs. There's no way Albert Pujols is going quietly into the October night. I know for a fact there's going to be some walk-off bomb or just another. The ink is not dry on Albert Pujols' story. What about pitcher-wise? We got a couple arms where you're like, this is my guy's been doing it forever. Is there somebody on the mound that has that same level of respect as Albert?
Like JUCO? Like, fuck. I don't know if pitchers, I know too many JUCO bandits. I know, obviously, Bryce Harper. Big JUCO bandit. He did the same thing as Pujols. You know, fuck high school. He's like, I'm going to go early to JUCO. Went to fucking, you know, Nevada. Just destroyed everybody and got drafted first overall. And there was actually another kid, too, that that recently did the same thing named Ken Collier. He's a first-round pick. He did the same thing. Like, got out of high school early and then went to JUCO. Went to Chipola, balled the fuck out, and got drafted first round. Like, it's just incredible, you know, opportunity there. You know, a lot of people, like, you know – well, if you look at Bryce Harper, he's the best high school player in the world, like, ever, right? And then there, you know, he's like a phenom and shit. He chose JUCO, right? I mean, because obviously he wanted to get drafted and all that. But you're telling me you're better than Bryce Harper? Like, no, you're not. Like, who the fuck do you think you are? Bryce Harper chose JUCO. Like, you ain't too big to go to JUCO. You know what I'm saying? Tim Anderson, same thing. JUCO bandit. He just fucking ball the fuck out and just. That's the thing. No matter where the fuck you go, if you ball the fuck out, you're gonna get your chance, right? Jake, you went to fucking JUCO, balled the fuck up, threw gas, and fucking moved up. Like, obviously, I never made it to the big leagues, but, like, I mean, if I wouldn't have won a JUCO, like, I would have been just, like, went to just, like, some regular college, going to school, not playing baseball, you know, like, not becoming who I am now, you know? So there's so much opportunity there, man. A lot of people miss out on it. There's a stigma, there's a misconception, and I'm trying to change that by saying, fuck you, because you're wrong, you know? So.
Do you think the restrictions of D1, where you got to go for 3 years or until you're 21, do you think that, I mean, I think it's bullshit, but do you think if they were to change that, that it would take away from the beauty of junior college baseball?
Yeah, I think that's stupid too. But I mean, if that does happen, then who knows? And that's going to change the whole game of recruiting for especially like D1s, D2s, whatever the fuck you want to go to. But I mean, I don't hate it. I don't hate the idea. I think it's a good idea, to be honest, but I just don't know how that's definitely going to have an effect on the JUCO, right? So if you can go to Oregon State and get drafted as a freshman, I mean, if you do get a chance, I mean, you can do that. But there's also colleges, I mean, San Jack, I talked to the coach and stuff like that too. They had like 12 dudes drafted this past year. Like, it just fucking ridiculous. Their team's stacked. They're a Division I team, if not better than a lot of them. You know what I'm saying? So, and not all D1s are made the same. You know, Jake, I mean, you've seen them. Like, I played against some shitty D1s, man. Like, I mean, back in the day, like, when we played, like, I mean, we played against, like, Stetson was pretty bad. Notre Dame was pretty bad, too, back in the day. I think
you just say Notre Dame's fine. We're not doing the Stetson stuff either. Come on, man. Stetson's got some legends out there.
I played against them.
I know what you're saying. Where teams you show up and you expect, you know, you'd say, hey, I can't believe this is the quality of play. But at the same time, I don't think people realize how many D1 programs are. There's like 297. Each one comes with 35 spots. And realistically, you could probably cut those rosters in half and still have just as much of a pool there to compete against each other and create a good product. But, you know, roster spots or whatever. The D1 stigma after having played through it, I think is overplayed too. And just look at the quality of the players in the big leagues where they come from. There's just a number of high school players, D2, 3, JUCO guys. It takes forever. And I love the point that Jake brings up repeatedly here. Like, sometimes it just doesn't click till later. Going to Weatherford, throwing 98. Like, that obviously changes the trajectory. If you're at Oklahoma State, do you get as many reps? Do you get the same type of environment that allows you
right,
to grow?
Right.
You know, who knows?
One, I also wanted the opportunity to get drafted after my freshman year. Because I thought, you know, okay, I'll go here. And I did. I got drafted by the Brewers like in the 23rd, 24th round. But I was still like, I was still raw. Like, I had a change up. I had a really good curveball. I didn't throw enough strikes. I was walking a lot of guys, but just had really, really good shit. And I knew if I were to sign with the Brewers, I'm gonna go to fucking low A or short season. And then maybe I don't develop as well. You know, and it just, you never fucking know. So, and a lot of kids, and I think with the JUCO thing too, a lot of it will come down to like academics. Like, there's a lot more leeway in JUCO, which is nice. Cause if your goal, and for most of us, our goal is to go there to focus on our sport. And I think that's kind of a problem in this country. Cause when I played in Cuba with the national team, they have sports universities. So they go there, they practice their sport for like 8 to 10 hours a day, and then they go to class for like 2 hours. Because it's like, if the sport doesn't work out, you can always go back to your, you can go get a job and do your academics, but your athletic window is so small. So like, it should be a little bit more focused on allowing these kids to develop in that regard. Because how many people do you know that are in their early to mid 30s that still haven't figured out what they're going to do for a career?
100%. And again, so that's a great point, because actually I was born in South Korea. I grew up there until I was 13 years old. And playing baseball over in fucking Korea is like, you practice for like 8 hours a day. And I was like 10 years old. Like, and obviously that's too much. I used to get beat the fuck up by the coach. The coach will literally, back in the day, no joke, this is no joke, we're taking infield, right? In and out. And a left fielder made a mistake. I was catching. Coach calls him over. He runs all the way from left field, just fucking, just, you know, huffing and puffing, gets in a push-up position. Coach, like, he's like a grown-ass man, hit a fungo, beats the fuck out of him, like, right in front of me. I'm like, oh my fucking God. Like, he's hitting the shit out of him, like, on the, like a hamstring, like, ass area, like, 2-3 times, like, as hard as possible. Like, I'm talking, like, now me thinking, like, that's, you go to jail for that here. But, like, back in Korea, back then, that's how it works. I mean, coaches are like,
how old was this player?
We're 10 years old. we're 10 years old. So yeah, and then he runs back. He's like, does that, runs back crying, and I'm like about to cry because I'm 10. I'm catching. I'm like freaking the fuck. If I make a mistake, I'm dying. You know, like I remember coach used to fucking chase me because we, dude, we're doing like laps on a high, like on our little field or whatever, school field. 30 laps as a warm up. And that literally took us like an hour. That's an hour warm up. I was running 30 fucking laps and I'm puking. I'm fucking throwing up because I've always been fat. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I was a chunky kid. And then the coach, I remember coach chasing me down with the fungo, like ready to beat me up if I don't run faster. It's just crazy stuff I've been through. South Korea and that kind of stuff. It's, obviously, that's to the very extreme. But one thing that was good, I got to play baseball every day. So when I moved to Canada, right, and I was literally better than everyone. I was better than everyone because I moved to Canada when I was 13. And I went to, like, I'm just about to enter high school. We show up. There's no high school baseball teams in Canada, so it's, like, all club teams. So I show up to, like, a local club team, and I just fucking wax everybody. They're like, who the fuck is this Asian guy? I didn't speak any English either. You know, it's just badass. I was just like, I don't know what the fuck everyone's talking about, but I'm going to ball the fuck up. I threw harder than everyone. I was a catcher, but, like, they wanted me to pitch because I threw harder than everybody. It's just crazy stuff. But, again, you're right, though, Jake. That's a good point because now, though, there's a lot of the IMG Academy and all these stuff that are, like, focused on baseball. You go to school and you, like, develop as a baseball player more so than just, like, worrying about school. And for me, like, I like that because I'm not much of a school guy. Everyone's different. You know, I went to JUCO and going to school, I was a 2.6, 2.6 GPA. Like, I basically went to school to get enough grades to not sit for the season. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanted to get enough so that I can, like, ball the fuck out. And the rest of the time, though, it's not like I fucked around. I spent all the extra time I had not going to school or whatever, not doing too much school stuff into baseball. And that obviously made me a better player. So I think there's pros and cons, but for me, I think there's more pros than anything for especially guys like me.
Who do you think are the best overall athletes in sports? Because, and I'll give you kind of the way I think about this. I think that rotational athletes are the best athletes. Like, if you were to put a bat or have a basketball player throw a baseball, they look like they've never seen one before.
That's bad.
And,
right.
And I think, you know, like a Bo Jackson, a Deion Sanders, someone who had that ability on the football field, but could also rotate. To me, those are the most elite athletes on the planet. And did you play multiple sports growing up, or were you just strictly baseball?
I played rugby. I played rugby in high school because there was no football at the time in, like, where I grew up. So in Canada, football is not as big. Rugby actually is a pretty big sport over there. So I played high school rugby, which, again, it made me tougher. I broke a bunch of bones, but it was good. Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed playing. I was a prop as well, which I don't know if you guys seen, like, a scrum. Like, I was at the front, like, the, you know, those. So, like, my shoulders get beat up. Now, I had to stop playing my senior year of high school because, like, I kind of knew, like, I wanted to go somewhere with baseball. You know, like, I was like, okay, I'm going to stop so that I don't fucking, you know, break my leg and just be done forever, you know? So, but I mean, yeah, I mean, other than that, I didn't really play out in sports. I'm a pretty good rotational athlete myself right now, just because I've been training. I haven't stopped training, you know, for multiple years, even past done playing. So even golf, I mean, dude, I'm training to go to a, like, long drive competition at some point. Maybe not anytime soon, but I've been up to 389 yards. I hit the fuck out of them. My club head speed's been up to 144. If it's 150 plus, it's going to be like pro, like long driver numbers. And then my ball speed's been up to like 214. So if it's 225 and up, it's obviously considered like elite or whatever in long drive. And I'm not saying I'm there, but I'm getting closer. And again, just that's the thing. Like, I did shot put, right? It's an extremely difficult sport. I've been like linking up with a lot of athletes or whatever. Crazy sport, and it's electric. But I mean, I can go like throw. I don't look like an idiot. Does that make sense? Like, I don't look like, you know, those first pitches, first ceremony, first pitch, you're like, that was bad. You know, those professional athletes come in, just throw like fucking yips everywhere. Just like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, I don't look like that because like you said, like a rotational athlete, we train to be rotational fast, but also like having some kind of, I think that's a part of athleticism, right? It's being able to rotate fast. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I preach to kids to play multiple sports when they're young. And but I know, like you said, the IMG Academy and all these other these big organizations are trying to get kids to be one sport specific. And I just, I mean, I played four sports until I was like a sophomore in high school. And it's tough though, because you see my son's playing tackle football now in his second season, and you see all these teams, like we played a team that only does football. That's all they do. And then we play a couple teams in the spring, baseball, that all they do is baseball. But I tell them, I'm like, look, I think that it's going to pay off in the long run if we continue to do this at least for a few more years. Like, I mean, it's crazy time consuming because we basically have no time for anything except sports. But I think it pays off, man. And baseball, I think, is the one sport that you cannot pick up as you get a little bit older. Because if you haven't played baseball and say you're 11 or 12 years old or 13, and you try and stand in the box and learn how to hit, I think it's almost impossible. But I think it goes the other way. Like if you play baseball for a long time and you want to try basketball or football, those are a much easier to pick up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with you on that. Like, so for me, I get a lot of DMs from kids and shit like that. They're like, hey, like, you know, I love baseball. This is all I want to do. Like, but I'm playing like other sports. Like, what do you think? So for me, to me, it all depends on the kid. What the fuck they want. So if the kid's like, dude, like, I live and breathe. But you know, some kids are like that. They just like live and breathe baseball. Nothing else matters. And they fucking sleep with a bat. Like, it's just crazy. They're like all out on baseball. If you're a kid like that, you don't want to do anything else. If you dread going to a football practice, but you just want to go hit some fucking tanks with your buddies, do that. Like, if you want to play baseball just all the time, do that. But it's obviously tough, because if you're playing, like, some of these kids are playing ball for year round. Like I'm talking like games every weekend for a year. Like, Jake, even like a big leaguer playing 162 game season is fucking long, man. Like, and me playing 144 in minor league was fucking long. I need a little bit of time off. Not necessarily from training, but like from baseball. Like, I just need some time off just to recharge, right? But like some of these kids like don't get that. Now, if you play year round like that, it's gonna be very easy to get burnt out, right? You get burnt out. And getting burnt out is a real thing. You can't force someone to like not get burnt out, because if you're burnt out, you're fucking burnt out. You're done. That's it, right? So but if you're a kid, like, you don't give a fuck. There are some kids I met, high school kids, right? Like, they're content creators, they're IG, they got like 50,000-60,000 followers. It's crazy. Now, they live and breathe baseball 24/7 every single day. If you're that kind of kid, you're fine. You can do whatever the fuck you want. If you want to play baseball every day to be the best version of yourself, your favorite player is Juan Soto, you don't be like him. That's fine. That is fine. But I think there's a very high chance of kids getting sick of the sport if they're doing it every single fucking day when they're kids. If their kids should be playing around with their friends, not fucking going on a travel tournament every fucking weekend to all these different states, getting tired as fuck, burnt out. You know, this is not it. But I mean, yeah.
With the new the recent interest in increasing velocity and increasing power output and overall strength, have you had conversations with parents or young kids when they ask you, what do I do to get my son to throw harder? And the kid's like eight years old, you know. And I tell parents, I'm like, let them grow. Like, because if you try and have kids at 6, 7, 8 years old doing weighted ball training and shit like that, I think you're actually hurting them. So I think you need, like, maybe once kids like start to hit puberty, I think it's not a bad idea to incorporate, you know, some free weights and maybe some light weighted ball stuff. But my son just turned 11. We do a ton of band stuff. We do a lot of resistance training, but not a bunch of free weights, because I don't want to load him up and load his back with weight. So,
and you want to be careful, especially when the kids are young, right? Because if you hurt them when they're young, dude, they're going to be dealing with that the rest of their lives. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you fuck a kid's arm up, right? I mean, a lot of these kids now have TJ when they're like 15. Like, it's fucking insane, because they're playing ball year round. Like, there's tons of fucking volume and shit like that. But I mean, I'm 100% agreeing with you on that. Like, I get so many fucking DMs from a lot of my fan base. I don't know why my fan base is like 10 to like 15 year old kids, even though I fucking motherfuck everyone online. Like, why do you fuckers follow? You should not be following me. But anyways, they ask me all these questions, like, how do I get velo and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, like, don't worry about it. Don't you just be a kid, you know, like, you're a fucking kid. Be a kid. When it's time to train, you know when it's time. You know, like for me, that was like when I went to like my late years of high school. I'm like, dude, like I'm gonna start training. So because I felt the need, right? There's everyone has that time when you feel the need to do something, and that's when you do it. Now, for some people, it might be too late, but I mean, hopefully, it's not too late. You know what I'm saying? But you can't force anybody to do anything, especially when it comes to training. For me, like I found a joy in training, which is, I mean, that's what I recommend doing. So for me, if there's a kid like, hey, like, what do I do? Like, I want to throw harder. Well, find the joy in throwing harder, having like set small goals. If you threw 70 today, try to go for 71 next week, right? 72 the week after, like small goals like that, and find the joy in it, enjoy the process type shit. But yeah, there's no answer. There's no like, oh, you're 10 years old and you weigh 130 pounds. Do this and you'll throw 95. There's none of that bullshit. None of that shit works. Everyone's different. So if you're preaching that, shut the fuck up. You're wrong and go fuck yourself. That's what I feel like.
Eloquently said. Eloquently said. Is there, I'm curious if there's a challenge you want to do. Can we do one with you and Jake? Is there something you think you could beat Jake in?
I think we need to do exit velocity for sure. I mean, I hit pumps, so we can do that. And I just found this. I'm unpacking at the house. I just came across this guy right here.
I think he's got fucking.
So
juice,
if you're watching on YouTube, if you're not, holy it's the shit. Air Gen 1X. I actually. Me and Samarja, we bought these off eBay when we were with the Cubs, and we were hitting balls on the rooftops, just hitting
That's
nukes, man. So I still love to hit. I was a little frustrated to see the DH was put in play, but yeah, I ultimately like I think, and the older I got, I'm like, all right, I think it's better for the game, but there's nothing better than hitting the big leagues, man. It's just a blast.
I can't even imagine. I mean, I've talked to like Johnny Gomes and shit like that. I mean. Some of the stories you guys have is fucking insane. But I mean, dude, like, I'd love to do, yeah, let's link up some point, man. Let's do exit velo, even like live at bats. That'll be fucking fun. Just do random shit, you know, like just fucking drink some beers and fucking full send for the boys. And we'll shotgun beers together, Carl. That's what we're going to do for the boys.
Yeah. Get my exit velocity on that. No, I still got a little bit. You've seen my arm side singer run. You were talking about
dude,
the YouTube videos.
My guy still got it.
We posted a video last year. Me and White Sox Dave went to Northwestern, and we just put Spider Tech, and we used Spider Tech to like
dude.
Of all, and we've got like a good YouTube base for Barstool Chicago and the content we put out. I think it's like 50 something thousand subscribers or whatever. And you know, like we put our podcast, we'll do funny stuff around town. Nothing to date has even come close to that video. I think it's done over 500,000 views because there was something about the algorithm at the right time where it was like, you know, Jabronis try Spider Tech or something for the first time.
Because I remember when you guys posted that because Spider Tech shit was like super hot back then. You know,
so hot. And it's crazy how the YouTube stuff works.
Everyone's talking about that. Now no one's talking about it. I'm like.
No one
like,
cares.
That shit was literally like what everyone in baseball just talked about. It's a Spider Tech, Spider Tech. That's it. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and then one Spider Tech video does like 500,000 views. So there is something about where it's like, oh, it's topical right now. I just don't know the big topical stuff. You know, Judge and Pujols and their home run chase. It's like, how long would it take for you to hit 62 home runs off a Jugs machine or something? You know, I don't know, stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, no, that would be good.
45 minutes.
Yeah.
45
minutes, maybe.
Can you hit 62 with 62?
10 minutes with the air. Yep. 10 minutes with an air.
Well, dude, thanks so much for coming on and telling your story. The King of JUCO brand is something that I've thoroughly enjoyed. I've enjoyed watching your story, obviously hanging out last year at the Field of Dreams game. But, like, I'm a huge fan for all the reasons we talk about, just making the game fun. Like, the stuff you talk about is sincerely pulling at my heartstrings, like being in the dugout, bullshit with the boys, showing up to BP one day and just being like – out of nowhere, just the two guys being like, we'll see who could hit more home runs in BP and just getting bitched at by the coaches. We said middle other way, god damn it.
Right,
you know,
right,
just guys
right.
laughing at me like, doesn't matter, dude, we're trying to hit bombs today. There's all those like funny little things that make this game great, and it's a reason why a group of guys in their mid-30s are still sitting around talking about it, like even though we've all had different touch points with it. So I would highly recommend our audience goes checks out your content, your YouTube page. It's ridiculous. Some of these titles on the videos are hilarious. Just like minor leaguer competes for free Chipotle. Just all ridiculous stuff you do. Thanks so much for your time and good luck. I got to ask, World Series winner, quick prediction.
Ooh, fuck. I mean,
scoring on record, Sim.
I hope the Mariners. I hope the Mariners, but I mean, obviously, I got to go. Dodgers. Dodgers.
How do you,
I mean,
how do you not go Dodgers?
Yeah, Dodgers.
I mean, yeah, it's just impossible. Like, when you watch them, right? It's just, it's just different, you know, like when they're just like waxing everyone. It's not like some of these games are not close either. You know, there's like depth, and I'm sure you've seen a lot more, Jake. It's just like when you watch the team, like from top to bottom, right? A lot of teams have like their superstars or whatever, and they have like other guys that are like maybe not as good, you know, but like their depth is just stupid as fuck. Like anybody in that lineup can hit a tank at any moment, and they can hit like multiple of them, you know what I'm saying? Not just like one, you know, so right. It's crazy.
Los Angeles Dodgers, we got you. Dodgers versus Mariners, Dodgers in 7 games. This is Eric Sim, King of JUCO. Go follow his stuff on YouTube. Thanks for joining us today, buddy.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
That's Eric Sim. Go check him out, King of JUCO on YouTube. You will not be disappointed with the entertainment value. This guy pumps out videos all the time, and we're going to go see him in the offseason, do some stuff. I want to get a challenge with you and him going. As we monitor World Baseball Classic stuff, too, maybe there's a reason you guys trained together or something. We'll see. No pressure, yeah. Dude. You got a big Hall
of
Fame.
No, I don't feel pressure. I'm gonna get it going anyways. I mean, football season will wind down eventually, and it'll be time to start getting in the cage and getting on a throwing program with Cooper. So I'll fire it back up and see how it feels. It's gonna feel good. I know that.
It's gonna feel good. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, just you know, putting spikes on again for the first time in a while. Getting off the slope, getting downhill, throwing some flat grounds. It's going to feel nice. So we'll play it by ear. We'll go week to week, and I'll make a decision at some point soon.
Okay. I get to come. I cannot wait. I'm coming out for the workout. I want to put the cleats on. Gloves broken in, obviously. You know, I'm here for you. It's basically what I want to make myself
feel. Yeah, I know
you
are.
And not from physical stuff you got all taken care of, but if you need anything from, you know, just the mental side or – you don't want to go through pitch grips.
Yeah.
You know, I'll put together a scouting report. You don't have to read it, but I could just say, like, hey, I prepped the scouting report. That's a cool little feather in the hat for me. I'm being selfish.
No, but, hey, I know you'll assist and aid in any way you can. And I'll put you to good use.
Last segment here, can we get a watch review? I was late for a podcast a couple weeks ago, and I was like, well, don't worry. We'll manage time. What do you think?
We're talking about now. Yeah, the Foreign Sweat, the Wayfinder, made in Chicago, Illinois. You know, I love how it illuminates when it's dark as well as it does. The numerals are extremely bright. I love the blue bezel with the blue rubber strap. It's just very, very sleek, very sporty. It's light on the wrist, very easy to wear. And if you're a fan of, you know, removing the strap, it's got these easy to release like pins. You don't need any like Bergeron tools to take it off and risk scratching the case and doing damage to your watch. So very thought out, very ergonomic is a nice word. Fits the wrist very well. I mean, you don't even know you have it on. And it looks great. I mean, people think it's a Rolex because that's really all I ever wear. But I've been wearing this for 9-10 days straight, and I don't envision myself taking it off. Just a great timepiece. Great timepiece.
Yeah, we got some feedback from your trip to Chicago. Somebody DM'd me. They were like, yo, is Jake wearing I don't even know the name of the watch, but you'd caught some people's attention that were like, yo, wait, you were doing a snake draft, and he was wearing this watch.
That was a Patek. It was a Patek Philippe Aquanaut.
Nice. Sounds nice, and that's just who I am. I know that it's nice. I don't need to know that it's nice. I know that it's nice because you know it's nice.
Yeah, it's a great watch. Like it a lot.
Dude, congratulations on this Hall of Fame induction. This is very cool because I going back to places where you found yourself, and there's different places along the way for me where I'm like, oh, I know I got a big piece of me here and a big piece of me here. And if like to go back and know that it's meaningful for them and it's meaningful for you and to have that bond and to have TCU bring you back, that's for all the stuff you've done. That's just fucking awesome to go back and be able to bring the kids back. So have a great, great weekend.
Thanks, man. Yeah. And it's really cool because when I was there and I was going through my career at TCU, I didn't know like how far I was going to potentially be able to take it. You know, was I going to, I was pitching extremely well, and I kept piling up good start after good start, and you start to realize, like, man, like, maybe I'll, you know, be a high draft pick. Maybe I'll be able to pitch in the big league sometime. And it just kept getting better and better, and I was rolling with it and trying to do the best for my team and carry us to a regional and beyond, which we weren't able to do that during my time there. But I had a very special 2 years as a Horned Frog, and it's going to be a really fun weekend for not only myself but the other inductees, and look forward to watching TCU beat OU and go 4-0.
Yeah, I will be hammering TCU on the Penn Sportsbook. Speaking of which, guys, check your bombs away. Up on Mondays and Wednesdays, we're going to be playing these things through October. A lot of action coming. A lot of playoff action coming. Next week's going to be a great show. Or next week, we're doing great stuff getting into the playoffs. I've been really excited for us, too, to sit down and do, like, the in-game, if there's, like, when we're doing, like, an in-game stream, so people can hear us chat the game in real time. Like, the in-game strategy stuff, I think, is where our brains gravitate towards. So I'm excited for
that. Yeah, it'll be fun to do that for the first time.
Amen, brother. All right, good weekend. Congratulations. Thanks, everybody, for listening to today's show. Go subscribe to the page.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money.